This is it. We've got an Amex Platinum Pro on our hands, ladies and gentlemen. We haven't seen anyone relax like this before in the Centurion Lounge. Is he connecting to complimentary Wi-Fi? Oh, my. Look at that. He is. And you will not believe where he's going next. The Amex dedicated card member entrance for the win. Unbelievable.
When you get travel perks with Amex Platinum, you're part of the action. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon and welcome to the Hoosier Huddle podcast. We're coming to you live from Denver International Airport. I am on my way back to Indianapolis from the Foster Farms Bowl. TJ Inman will be joining me shortly from Indianapolis. We'll talk about IU's narrow 26-24 loss yesterday. So please excuse the airport announcements, gate changes, and all of those things. Hopefully, nothing goes wrong at the airport, and I can make my flight a little bit later. So, initial thoughts on the loss for me. I thought it was a entertaining game, an exciting game, and you know it stinks not to win, but I think it gave me some confidence going forward. Right now, we bring in TJ Inman. TJ, how are you?
I'm doing okay. Yeah, we're it's very cold and wintry, and IU's football season is now officially over. So a bit of a gloom here this morning, especially after a rather frustrating night for IU sports fans. But it's the sun rises, and we'll fight another day, I suppose. But it was the game followed a familiar script.
Is it morning?
Yeah. Well. Yeah.
I'm on some different time zone with 2 hours of sleep in the ether. But TJ, as you were saying, this game did follow the IU football script.
Yeah.
A frustrating loss. I do want to point out some good things. I thought the defense played very well. They kept them in the game, especially in that third quarter where IU only had 32 yards of offense. The defense held Utah to just 2 field goals and 6 points, and that really kept the game within a score. IU would score a touchdown in the fourth quarter to take the 1-point lead, but ultimately lose. So the defense played well, especially with Marcus Oliver out, who was missing with a knee injury, and without A'shaun Riggins, who was banged up as well. So, you know, Tyler Green, I thought, played well. Rashard Vant played really, really well. They avoided him at all costs. And then just Joe Williams, man. Joe Williams went crazy last night. I think IU fans wish he had stayed retired. But he put on an amazing performance of 222 yards on the ground. And this game turned out just like we thought it would. Where it came down to special teams, and that to me was the difference. Utah made more plays in the special teams. They won the field position battle, and IU had a chance to win, even though Richard Lego, his completion percentage was more attuned to a Hall of Fame baseball player than a quarterback with the 38.5% completion percentage. So with that being said, what were your takeaways from the game?
Well, I was incredibly impressed by IU's pass rush. Utah had and they have a good offensive line and a mobile quarterback, but they were unable, particularly in the second half, they were unable to block IU's pass rush. The Hoosiers made some adjustments after kind of a slow start on defense. The Hoosiers made some adjustments that I'll give credit to Tom Allen, but I'm sure there were other guys, you know, inputting in that decision as well. But they switched up the pressure that they were bringing, and it looked like they started pressuring more up the middle against Utah's offensive line, and it was working incredibly well. Season high in sacks. You know, T. Gray Scales had another very good game. I think you're right to point out he won
defensive MVP defensive MVP honors. He's the guy I voted for defensive MVP. Joe Williams is obviously the offensive MVP. But yeah, you know, Tigre Scales played very well. They missed Marcus Oliver. He's a guy who, you know, maybe takes the load off of Tigre a little bit. The defense is on the field for 35 minutes. And I think as long as I've been running the site, that was the longest or the biggest differential in time of possession I remember writing about. And you could tell that defense was gassed at the end of the game. And maybe having Marcus Oliver would have made a difference in tackling Joe Williams.
Yeah, I think that that's 100% accurate. I will say that I think Chris Covington did admirably filling in. He does not have near the level of experience Marcus Oliver does, and right now he's not the caliber of player Marcus Oliver is. But I do think Covington certainly didn't have a bad performance filling in for him. I think you're right to point out Tyver Green. I think that Keontae Walton had a nice day. I think he had 8 tackles. So it was good to see some just a few different guys step up, mainly Walton and Green, that have not really had a ton of opportunity to shine this year, get their chance. On offense, as far as positives go, I think Nick Westbrook had a couple of nice catches. I wish that they would have taken more deep shots on him, but the way that the passing game was struggling, I guess I understand why that didn't occur. I think Ricky Brookins did well with his carries. I know his average ended up at like 4.2 yards a carry, but he had a couple that
he averaged
lost 4.4.
Okay. He had 4.4. He was clearly the best running back IU had yesterday. Even though Devine had a touchdown, had more yards.
Nice run. He had a nice like 15-yard run that I think it's right at the start of the second half. Was Redding's best run. He showed some patience waiting for a block to develop to the left side, I think it was, and then cut it upfield. But, yeah, I thought Brookins was IU's best back. He even had a nice catch out of the backfield on a pretty nice play call, I thought, on a 3rd-and-5 that kept Indiana probably their best offensive drive today, really. They converted 2 3rd downs. It was really the only time all game Lego looked sharp. So I thought that was a positive. I'll give credit to the offensive line because they went against a tremendous Utah defensive front. They really do have some strong, strong players up there that are going to play in the NFL very soon. And I thought the offensive line did a pretty good job with, you know, a limited running game as far as running back depth and ability goes.
And
from an explosiveness standpoint, I thought they did a pretty good job. And then they, you know, it's tough to say they did excellent pass blocking. I didn't think they were terrible. I don't think they got overwhelmed by Utah's defensive line, which, again, they are very, very impressive. I'd rank them up there with any that Indiana played this year. So, yeah, I think that was a positive. Honestly, the special teams performance was, and this is saying something, it's better than I expected it to be. Utah definitely won the game on special teams, but I thought Indiana's special teams would be outclassed even more than it was, which shows where I have the bar set for them right now. But Gedeon probably had his best game that he's played at Indiana in terms of punting. But I mean, did he have
gave
any good
me a
ones
heart attack.
This year? I mean, they were line drive punts, but
FIU was
none of them got
his
blocked.
Game.
I guess so. Yeah.
One of them should have been.
None of them got blocked.
Excuse me. TJ, to go back to your offensive line, defensive line, IU was out without several starters. You know, Brandon Knight didn't play. Jacob Bailey was out with an injury. You're missing Demetri Camille, and they held up pretty well. Simon Stepniak, I thought, played pretty well. Dan Feeney totally neutralized Hunter Dimmick in the game. Hunter Dimmick finished
in that
with
holding,
one.
That holding call was a bad call. The hold that they had on Feeney, that was a bad call, and I watched it a couple of times. I rewound it and watched it in the Fox analyst, Joel Klatt, who does a very nice job. I always enjoy watching him, and I'm pleased that he'll be calling some Big Ten games now. I thought that, you know, he agreed, and he thought it was a bad call as well. Yeah, you're right. Feeney had a very nice game, and I do want to shout out to Jacob Bailey. His IU career is now done. Unable to go in the bowl game due to an injury, and he, you know, he's a tough guy that battled through a lot of knee problems and kept playing when he could, and I used to have a lot of respect for that. So congrats to him on finishing up his career as a part of a IU offensive line tradition that has gotten stronger during his time there. So I just wanted to get that in there before we move on.
Yeah, and you know, I thank Jacob Bailey. He's a fun guy to talk to. And if you ever see the clip of him on Sportslight with Mike Hall, they did the challenge where they put noise-canceling headphones on and you try to guess what the people are mouthing. And that was hilarious. So kudos to him. Congratulations on a good IU career. And we wish him the best. But let's dive deeper into the issues IU had yesterday. I thought they started the game with a bang. Greg Gooch totally lit up Kyle Foulkes. It looked like Utah just was sleepwalking through that kickoff, and maybe that hit woke him up a little bit. But other than that, the special teams, I guess your evaluation of Gideon is a lot more lenient than mine. Booby Hobbs is a dangerous return guy.
None of them got
Barlow.
So,
like, to me, those punts had zero hang time. He was a move away from really breaking some punt returns. Chase Dutra did a tremendous job covering him downfield. But you're playing with fire when your punts get, you know, 12 feet off the ground, and you're giving – and the guy is catching them on the fly, and you're – coverage team is not down there just yet. I thought Griffin Oakes started the game, and I want to emphasize this. I thought he was back to being the Griffin Oakes we saw at the beginning of last year. He was booming kickoffs into the end zone for touchbacks and putting the ball where he needed to. He had that short chip shot field goal. I thought his confidence would be high, and then came that 40-yard field goal from the middle of the field. It also looked like that final extra point, he struggled with that too. And maybe that shook his confidence a little bit. But, man, that missed field goal was huge. To go up four with 5.5 minutes left, forcing Utah to then score a touchdown. It's the butterfly effect. You can't say that they would have had that 32-yard run or would have had a goal-to-go situation. But let's say they did. They were 116th in the nation in the red zone, and you're making them defeat their Achilles heel to beat you. And that missed extra point was just killer. Of course, the offense could have put it away with a touchdown to go up eight. As well, but they couldn't get that done. And to me, the game turned there were two turning points to me. The biggest one was Devine Redding's fumble in the second quarter. IU, it was a 10-14 point swing, you'd expect them to hit the field goal down there, maybe get a touchdown. Utah gets the ball, marches 95 yards down the field, makes 17-7 instead of IU having a 14-10 or a tie game at 10-10. The handoff was wonky. It looked like he bobbled the handoff, didn't really have a good handle on it, and then it looked like an IU player's helmet knocked it out as well. Devine Redding really struggled yesterday. He dropped the screen pass that could have gone for major yardage in a big play. He didn't hit. The holes were there. IU's run blocking was pretty good. Despite the numbers they put up, the holes were there. He just, you know, he runs too much east and west against this defense instead of why Ricky Brookins was successful. It's because he hit the hole with authority and burst through it. And he got, you know, 7, 8, 9 yards at times, and he broke off a 20-yard run as well. The manifest of the things that plagued IU all year, you know, came back to haunt them in the bowl game. And then you had Richard Lego. The receivers dropped too many balls. Richard Lego looked off. I think they were criticizing his arm slot or mechanics on the broadcast, but he looked. It's safe to say that IU will have a quarterback competition in the spring. At least that's what you'd hope. You know, even though Xander's gone, you're going to have Peyton Ramsey, Austin King, and we'll see who else is back there. And then hopefully IU could land Tyler Lytle as well and bring him into a mix. But, you know, Peyton Ramsey will still be a redshirt freshman. Lytle will be a true freshman. So you've got to give Lego the upper hand. But after yesterday's performance, that competition is wide open now.
Yeah, on that on the mechanics point, yeah, they were and Joel Klatt is a former quarterback that played for Colorado, and I think he does a very nice job as an analyst. And he was pointing out that Richard Lego's had a problem throughout the year. He said at the start of the telecast that he had a problem throughout the year of having a lot of his passes knocked down at the line of scrimmage, and that they were showing his throwing motion, and he doesn't really use his 6'6 frame. He kind of almost shrinks down a little bit. And he does not release the ball at a high point. It's not sidearm at all, but it's certainly not an over-the-top, completely over-the-top motion. And 7 of his passes got knocked down at the line of scrimmage yesterday by Utah's defensive linemen. So it's something that they were clearly aware of. They had their hands up and were active, and good for them. But, you know, part of that is still on Lego to get it over the line to your receivers. And, yeah, their receivers did not help him a ton yesterday. There were a couple of drops that could have gone for big plays on tunnel screens. Redding had one, Page had one that both could have gone for very nice plays. Timian had a drop that, you are definitely not used to seeing him make. So, maybe some of that is some rust from time off. It usually affects the offenses more than it does the defense in these bowl games. But, whatever the case may be, it was a very poor performance in the passing offense, and one that I think likely we'll see some changes made in the makeup of that passing attack before next season, whether that's personnel changes with players that are on the field or coaching changes with who's in charge of the passing game or who's calling the plays. For that, we'll see. And I don't put this on Kevin Johns. I don't think he was doing a poor job calling plays.
No, I thought he called a great game, and we'll get into coaching in a second. But I thought he called a pretty I thought it was the best coach game of the year. It was fine. Were there plays that it wasn't a perfect game? Nobody coaches a perfect game. But it was. There were very few plays where you go, they shouldn't have run that. The one play where Lego – Utah should have had a pick six. It looked like a miscommunication between. It looked like a miscommunication between him and Westbrook, where he thought he was running a comeback and Westbrook thought he was running a go route. But other than that, I thought the most concerning part about Lego is that he had 15 extra practices, and
we heard positive things. It just didn't happen. It didn't translate.
Yeah. So. So who knows now with – he has the tools. We've seen his big arm. We've seen him make throws. But if he can't put it together during bowl practices, what's he going to do in the spring? And if it's a mechanical issue, is he able to fix it? Sometimes, you know, fixing these mechanical issues are not easy. It's not, you know, I always compare it to shooting a basketball, and there's a correct way to shoot a basketball and not. But sometimes, you know, do you let the guy who's got a wonky shot, if he's hitting them, do you let him continue to do that, or do you switch it up and make it fundamentally sound, but you're going to sacrifice some accuracy for a while? But, you know, he completed 38.5% of his passes, so why not try? But it's not a sure thing that he will improve. My faith in him is a little shaken. Yeah, I've been a Richard Lego backer. I thought he was clearly the best quarterback on the roster. People calling for Diamant yesterday. Yes, he had a nice throw, 36-yard touchdown to Westbrook. It was a tremendous catch. But I don't think he runs the ball against that Utah defense. Utah's defense laid a lot of lumber on Indiana's running backs yesterday. And Diamant, being 160-some-odd pounds, probably doesn't survive that for long. And then, you know, on that throw, he put all his energy behind it. The launch angle on that was almost – yeah, it was almost like it was like launching a rocket, almost. A tremendous throw, tremendous catch, and it provided a spark. But I don't know going forward if Diamant would have been that successful, or even worse than Lego, because they were playing a zero coverage defense. They're going to have a defender on Diamant in the run game, and then you're going to make Diamant throw the ball. His touchdown was his first touchdown pass since 2014, and I believe it was his second career touchdown pass. To me, I thought two curious things. One, where was Tyler Nate? I believe he was on the trip. I saw him in the team picture. And where was the bacon and legs package? It's been something that maybe that was a Kevin Wilson thing where – and Kevin Johns didn't like it or something like that. We know that Wilson brought in Nate. He was his guy and things like that. But that package was missing. But overall, I thought the coaching was good. There were no egregious timeouts with the play clock running down. To me, that was the most impressive thing. IU had all three timeouts at the end of both half situations. I thought Allen
probably
was
a first all year, really.
Yeah, Allen was okay at clock management at the end. That sack, I thought he should have taken the timeout after the sack. But they got up to the ball quick enough. That sack really put them in a bad position. And then there was a missed targeting call where, you know, everything's been called targeting, and then that happens, and there's no flag. But with 5 seconds left, they get a false start, pushes them back. With 5 seconds, you could run a short out route, especially it 5 seconds is right at that borderline of do you have enough time for two plays or not. They did have a timeout left.
Yeah.
I thought they wasted it at the time they called it. I thought Ricky Jones got out of bounds, and it was a first down. They stopped the clock. Then, you know, if you run a 8 to 10 yard route, you're relying on Griffin Oaks to kick a 50 plus yard field goal. We've seen him do it before, but it's a long shot with a guy who'd missed 10 field goals this year. So there's not much else you could have done. That final play, Allen said after the game, he wished that they could have got that throw off. I think they got the look downfield that they wanted. And then Lego just hit as he threw it. It looked like he took too long to load. He had some time.
Yep.
And then he got tackled from behind, and it just looked like he took too much time. But to me, I thought it was
like
the best call game of the year.
He reset his feet. So.
Yep. And then the most encouraging part is that, you know, Tom Allen looks the part, and now he We've seen him in a game against a good team, and he didn't look overwhelmed. There was no sense of panic in him. There was no, you know, other than arguing the targeting call, there was no Kevin Wilson tantrums. And then I think the thing that maybe some fans missed, Ralph Green was getting into it with Utah on the sideline, and I think he yanked Ralph Green off the field to calm him down before he got a penalty. And I don't know if Kevin Wilson does that. You know, I think that shows that the players have a lot of trust in him. That's not an easy move to make. Ralph Green's playing in his last game. He played very well yesterday. And he was emotional at the end. I mean, we were way up in the radio booth, and I think after they called that holding call, you could hear him clap from the top of the stadium. So, you know, taking Ralph Green, I don't know if he grabbed him by the shirt collar or something, or the shoulder pads, but he yanked him off the field, calmed him down, and got him back in there. So, to me, I thought Tom Allen showed me that it gives me a little bit more confidence going forward that he's the right guy to steer this ship through these rough waters.
I've been aboard that train since he was brought on as defensive coordinator, and then as permanent head coach. Yesterday did nothing to shake my confidence in him. I think his energy is infectious, and I really think he's going to connect with the fans and with the IU players and with the community in a way that we have not seen from a head coach since Terry Hepner, and I'm excited for that to happen. And I think we'll see a lot of it this off season, and we'll have a ton of talk about big picture stuff and all that. But I agree with you. In his initial outing, there was nothing really to raise any red flags about. Whoa, this might have been a jump too far for him. I don't think there's anyone that could say that. So, or at least
no,
without.
Yeah, I mean,
without making leads that aren't there. So.
They came out with their hair on fire. He had this team ready to go, which wasn't an issue under Wilson. But you saw it that they. Gooch with the big hit on the kickoff. They scored a touchdown there, which was huge. I think they adjusted pretty well in game. And to me, it's just clock management. It's, you know, there was a calmness on the sideline. Now, he's very energetic and running around, but there was like a calmness in terms of frustration and all that thing that maybe you see Kevin Wilson get red-faced and yelling at referees and chewing out players. And that's his style of coaching, and it works sometimes. But it just gave you a sense of a quiet confidence that Tom Allen is the right guy. Now, if they had come out and got blown off the field, that would have raised red flags, because that was something I was concerned about, was that, you know, they didn't do a formal coaching search. They just settled on Tom Allen. He does not have, you know, his only head coaching experience is at the high school level. He's been, you know, he has more than enough credentials. It was this jump too soon? But I thought he handled everything well. And now it's time to go hit the road recruiting. We'll see what staff changes are coming up. And, you know, we'll see.
Yeah, I mean, it's just,
you know,
it's truly making the program good. Like now that's what the focus is.
Yeah, and you know, we'll cover it through the off season, and I think we'll start having a weekly or biweekly off season podcast to update you. We'll get some recruits on as well, with some former players. Now that we've we've become closer to the players now, and I know a few of them would love to jump on with us,
awesome.
Former players, and you know. It's now recruiting. We'll see. We'll see what they need. There's a lot of holes they need to fill in recruiting, and it'll be interesting who and what they get in terms of positions and players. And then we have spring ball. I believe somebody tweeted out spring ball is like 50 or 60 days away.
So we'll get into that. We'll get into what
player
redshirt,
departures.
Player departures, redshirt guys you need to watch. Incoming
yep.
freshmen. I believe there are three or four mid-year signees that are into the mix in the spring. And we'll have like our mini season preview for the spring, and then we'll get into the countdown to kickoff and start getting ready for Ohio State in the opener. And, you know, Tom Allen talks about breaking through, and that's going to be a great opportunity to break through. Final thoughts,
yeah,
DJ?
Yeah, no doubt. I'm looking forward to all that stuff. And it was a fun season, often frustrating, but I really, truly enjoyed, especially the defense. I just enjoyed watching them play this year, and that it was a lot of fun, and I'm ready to do it again.
Yeah, I want to give a big shout out to Hoosier Nation. They're terrific this year. We have had a tremendous growth as a site,
yep.
and our followers on Twitter, our likers on Facebook, and especially the Hoosier Nation fan page, who has let me post on their group all season long. They've been tremendous as well. And I just want to, you know, I love covering this team, and it's because of the readers that makes it fun. And
yep.
so I just want to say thank you, and we'll keep you updated through the off season, which is not quite off season. But, you know, thanks for joining us, and we'll be back in 2017 and get started.
Absolutely. Yeah, 100% agree.
All right. Thanks for joining us, TJ. Have a happy new year and enjoy the rest of the bowl games.
Same to you, everyone.
All right. That does it for our Foster Farms Bowl post-game show. Thanks for joining us this season. Come back to HoosierHuddle.com often. Follow us on @Hoosier_Huddle. You can like us on Facebook. It's Facebook.com/TheHoosierHuddle. We appreciate your readership. We appreciate your support. If there's anything you guys think that we could do to improve our coverage, please let us know. DM us, email us, leave a comment on the site. Anything that we could do to help our coverage and make it better, we'll try and do. So thank you, and have a happy new year.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
The comfort of your favorite seat is now your comfy car selling command center, thanks to Carvana.
It doesn't get any better than this.
Your favorite seat's the best spot in the house. Make it even better by entering your license plate or VIN and getting a real offer in minutes.
There really is no place like home.
And speaking of home, Carvana will pick up your car from yours after you finalize your offer. Visit Carvana.com or download the app and sell your car from your comfy place.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search. Match. With Indeed. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/match. Just go to Indeed.com/match right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/match. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
The comfort of your favorite seat is now your comfy car-selling command center, thanks to Carvana.
It doesn't get any better than this.
Your favorite seat's the best spot in the house. Make it even better by entering your license plate or VIN and getting a real offer in minutes.
There really is no place like home.
And speaking of home, Carvana will pick up your car from yours after you finalize your offer. Visit Carvana.com or download the app and sell your car from your comfy place.